When one person's word is pitted against another's, how do we exact justice? Keith Montgomery stands trial in the sexual battery of Riley Page. With limited physical evidence, a new form of lie detection, and an investigation under investigation, the Montgomery jury must determine if the truth lies with the victim or the defendant. Arguments have concluded and deliberations are in progress. The morning Riley Page went to police, she told them she'd been experiencing vaginal discomfort since the incident. They asked her if she'd be willing to undergo a sexual assault evidence collection kit, otherwise known as a rape kit. Riley consented, and she was transported to the hospital.
Please state your name and occupation.
Julia Coakley. I'm a sexual assault nurse examiner, or SANE.
And you performed the rape kit on Riley Page, is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you, Ms. Coakley. Can you please walk us through what happens during a rape kit?
Yes. The first step is immediate care. If there are any critical injuries that need immediate attention, those are handled first, of course.
Of course. Were there any such injuries on Ms. Page?
No critical injuries, no. The second step is medical history. We take a full medical history from the patient. Some of the questions we ask are related to their recent consensual sexual activity. Obviously, this is very personal, but it's important we understand what's been happening recently so we have a context when we conduct our physical examination. For example, if a patient is sexually active versus a virginal patient, that's relevant. And if a patient recently had consensual rough sex, it's important we know that in case any bruising or abrasions are noted. Such physical symptoms could be the result of consensual activity and not the assault in question.
And what was the status of Ms. Page's recent consensual sexual activity?
Ms. Page informed me she had had no consensual sexual activity for 10 weeks. That was helpful to know because it meant anything I found during my examination was definitely a result of the assault in question. During this step, I also asked the patient about the incident in question. It's important I understand what happened, so I know what to look for and where. I recorded all the information I received from Ms. Page in my notes.
I see. Thank you. What is the third step in the rape kit?
A head-to-toe examination. If the patient had arrived right after the assault, we would take pictures of her and the clothes she was wearing. However, since Ms. Page came in 4 days after the incident in question, that part was unnecessary. I asked Ms. Page to remove her clothes and photographed her. This part of the process can be traumatic for the patient, so that's why people in my profession are specially trained.
I understand. Were there any visible injuries on her body?
There were not. But during this stage, I conducted a full pelvic exam, and I discovered a small tear in her perineum.
Did you identify this as the injury that was causing the discomfort Riley mentioned to police?
Yes.
In your experience as a sexual assault nurse examiner, is that injury common for victims of sexual assault?
Yes.
What else did you discover during your examination?
That was the only injury. Because Ms. Page's assault was strictly vaginal, internal, oral, and anal examinations were not warranted. I took samples of her blood and urine to run for STD testing. The STD panel came back negative. She had been wearing the clothes she wore during the assault. I would have collected those. I also would have collected fingernail scrapings and any second-party evidence on the victim, such as hair. However, due to the time that had elapsed and Ms. Page showering several times before her exam, these measures were not warranted. And since this was a non-stranger assault, identification of the assailant was not an issue.
I see. After the physical exam, what is the next step in the rape kit?
That would normally be any mandatory reporting. For example, if the patient was a minor or a member of the elderly and I suspected sexual assault, I'd be required to report this to the authorities under Florida law. Again, since Ms. Page is an adult and had already reported the incident, this step was not an issue.
And what is the final step?
Follow-up care. Making Ms. Page understand when she could expect her STD results. As mentioned, those came back negative. And scheduling her for a follow-up medical appointment to check on the progress of her vaginal healing.
Ms. Coakley, you testified the tearing of the perineum is a common result of sexual assault.
That's correct.
Is perineum tearing also a common result of consensual sex?
Yes, that's true as well. It can happen as a result of not having enough lubrication, being overzealous with sexual positions, vigorous penile penetration, having intercourse with someone who has a large penis, or having vaginal tissue that is thin and not very elasticized. All of these can occur during sexual assault or consensual intercourse.
Okay, so the perineum tear, is it significant to you?
No.
Okay, why?
Well, because consensual sex can lead to it too, so throws it out the window.
Yeah. I mean.
Except for the fact that she didn't have any history of them in the past.
But has she been examined for that regularly?
She specifically said that she had vaginal pain.
Discomfort, yeah.
Discomfort, yeah.
Well, but if it can happen during consensual sex, then...
Then it completely rules it out?
It doesn't completely rule it out either way, mm-hmm. is the thing.
If she was completely obsessed with him, chances are she would be very aroused every mm-hmm. time she was with him, which would lead to lubrication, which would not make her tear as easily. So this shows, you know, this could, it could go either way, though, because maybe it's that she wasn't aroused and that's why this happened, but that can also happen for other reasons, too.
Mm-hmm. That's a
well,
good
she hadn't
point.
Had sex for 10 weeks as well, right? Wouldn't yeah. that be an issue mm-hmm. or possible issue? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You think she would be extra aroused then?
But there was also like a 10-week period where she hadn't been with this guy, and there's emotions and there's different arousals. Like there's sometimes when personally, like if you have sex, there's different emotions. Like sometimes it's very casual, sometimes it's very passionate. Like there's a 10-week period where she hadn't seen this man.
Also, if they're both drinking, if they're both drunk, then it's like
rough
or just clumsy sex, you know, so stuff like mm-hmm. that can
happen. They've been in a 6-month relationship.
Sure.
I mean, she'd never had an issue with this before. Why this particular night?
They also didn't take a 10-week break and have all those emotions into it as well.
Yeah.
That's a fair point. But isn't it also possible that something like this could happen due to rough sex, maybe because he was restraining her?
Just rough sex.
But consensual kind of rough sex, she probably would have been aroused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But we don't know if she was aroused or not.
And do we even know if really has much of an effect on it?
And I've read before where rape victims can have orgasms, which makes things very confusing. So you can still mm-hmm. have an orgasm and be raped mm-hmm. as well.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Everyone's body is so different.
Yes.
Yeah.
So is the things here, it's like, yes, the tear is common for sexual assault, but it's also common for mm-hmm. normal to / rough sex. Mm-hmm. So
and it's unfortunately both, it's that, both can, common,
that kind of rules
right?
it out.
Yeah,
I mean,
in terms of reasonable doubt, it could be reasonably argued that it came from consensual sex. So I don't see why we're even discussing this. Not even a factor.
I definitely think it's another piece of contributing evidence. I think it certainly, at the very least, it points to the likelihood that the sex was rough.
Okay.
Whether or not it was consensual or not, maybe there's still some...
But if the perineum tear was not there, she could still have been raped.
It's true.
Right.
But the fact that it is there doesn't... I mean, it's additional... I think it's additional possible evidence that... Mm-hmm.
I'd say it leans more towards it,
yes.
just because it'd never been there before, but it's definitely not an absolute by any means.
Oh, no. Well, I'm not suggesting it is, but we're compiling evidence here, and
yes.
I'd be curious to hear if there were other indicators of or violence or physicality.
That's a good point. Are there no bruises, no mm-hmm. scratches?
It had been 4 days. At this
bruises,
point, so.
Yeah,
bruises
but
last
bruises
last
longer than 4 days. I feel like I'm like, do we have any other physical
even like
evidence?
A strong grip on someone? Fingers can,
some girls bruise super easily. So I just, what else? We haven't heard any. There's nothing else apparently about her. There was at mm-hmm. all. So this is this small tear that could occur from normal sex. So that's where we're gonna
right. So we've got
ruin
something
man's life because of that.
There's not a lot of physical evidence, but it's that doesn't mean that it didn't happen to me.
Yeah. 4 days after the event.
Right. I mean, if she had black eyes and bruises all over her, I mean, it'd be very clear cut, right?
Yeah.
It'd be obvious.
Yeah.
Right, but I think, like the expert said not that long ago, those aren't really signs of non-stranger rape, right?
Mm. Right.
That's what he called righteous rape.
Yeah.
It's a weird word.
It didn't sit well with
me. He didn't like it either.
Mm-mm. I just don't think you can. It's just you can't say anything from that. She tore, yes, but again, what are you gonna? fault him for having good genetics. Like, like, come on. Like, seriously, you got to think of, again, we're thinking of one person.
Right, totally a factor. We don't know.
That they had a consensual relationship for 6 months. Yeah. Obviously, their bodies are used to each other at this point. And she's used to it.
So no, just to have 10 weeks. I mean, it'd been like two months.
But 6 months of consensual sex, repeated consensual sex with another person, like, don't you think her body would know him by now? And
but
that
no,
way,
no, like,
but again, 2 months have passed, and then even if she had gotten used to his gargantuan size or something, you know, I mean, it's like that could go away in 2 months.
Never,
you know,
had
or
a history of this, you know, before.
Yeah, but there's also again alcohol involved. Maybe they got a little bit different than they've normally done. There's times in my life where I've done. Had sex with the same man, and then one night it got a little crazy, and the next day I'm like, cheek, whoa, you know what I mean? Like, to sit there and say that it was always, it's just, it's a moot point to me. I don't, I think it's dumb.
And I don't think it was the first time they drank alcohol and had sex either.
Right.
I mean, they're college kids. It's not like, all right, here, let's try alcohol and have sex one time.
Yeah.
You know?
But this time was definitely different than any other time.
If you're enjoying this show, I'd love to turn you on to a great show that's been around a few years now called Astonishing Legends. This is an endorsement that's very personal to me because the hosts Scott and Forrest were two of the first podcasters to befriend me and offer guidance after my initial launch, which I was ecstatic to accept because their show is that good. Astonishing Legends is nonfiction, and every episode they tackle topics that range from historical mysteries and the Wild West to weird phenomena and the paranormal. Theirs is a fresh, entertaining approach to really mysterious stories. I'm a skeptic, and my sister is a believer, and it's a show we can enjoy together and then debate between ourselves. I'm a fan of any show that inspires debate and riveting conversations in my personal life. Astonishing Legends is perfect for that. So check it out by visiting iTunes, Google Play, Audioboom, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast directory and search for Astonishing Legends. Again, that's Astonishing Legends. Or visit astonishinglegends.com to start listening right now. Discrepancies are a big problem in sensitive trials. The defense is duty-bound to identify any discrepancies in complainant accounts and then explore them for the jury. You're about to hear testimony regarding a discrepancy in Riley Page's account. You'll also hear testimony that discrepancies in victim accounts are common. The weight of any discrepancy is decided by the jury.
That morning, Ms. Page went to the police station. She gave a brief verbal account to the police. After this initial report, they sent her immediately to the hospital in accordance with the local protocol. Detective Suarez took her notes from the interview and typed up her initial report. This is all very standard. You'll see this report submitted into evidence. And in that report, the detective writes, Ms. Page informed that Mr. Montgomery restrained her during battery. When asked where, she responded that he held her by the wrists. When asked if Mr. Montgomery restrained her anywhere else, Ms. Page responded that Mr. Montgomery pinned her across the chest with his forearm. However, mere hours later, while undergoing her rape kit, Riley Page informed the nurse examiner something different. Ms. Coakley, what did you ask Ms. Page in regards to her being physically restrained?
I asked her whether she had been physically grabbed, pinned, restrained, tied, or held down forcefully during my information gathering stage. I explained this was because I was going to examine her for bruising, swelling, or other signs of physical restraint.
And what did she tell you?
According to my notes, she answered yes. On my diagram, I have one on the left and right wrist identified.
Did Ms. Page tell you she was pinned by the defendant's forearm across the chest?
No, that would have been in my notes.
Did she inform you that her chest was touched or injured at all?
No.
And did you afterwards find any sign of physical restraint on her person?
I did not.
Not the wrists or the chest?
No.
The prosecution addressed the discrepancy in Riley's account while questioning victim's advocate, Dean Lionel.
Mr. Lionel, are discrepancies in victim's statements a red flag for false allegations?
Wow, it depends what you mean by red flags. If you mean that oftentimes discrepancies raise suspicion in the minds of law enforcement and others, yes, they do. But they aren't actually indicative of false allegations. This is possibly the biggest misconception about sexual assault reporting.
Why would discrepancies occur in a truthful account?
Discrepancies happen for a myriad of reasons. Sometimes the victim isn't comfortable sharing all the information with one party versus another. Sometimes her memory is foggy. Sometimes the victim is protecting her attacker by minimizing the event. It goes on. The reality is discrepancies happen in the vast majority of reports. It's practically impossible to maintain one cohesive, flawless, impenetrable narrative under traumatic conditions. There is no such thing as a perfect victim.
Okay, so to the police, Riley claimed she was restrained by the wrists and the chest. And to the nurse examiner, she claimed only to be restrained by the wrists. So there's a discrepancy here.
Well, it sounds like, to me, I mean, if she was going to be... So she, when she knew she was going to be checked by the doctor, she probably didn't talk about the chest because she knew she was faking it. I mean, why would she not? So that's such a key part of it. Mm-hmm. Also, the examiner didn't find anything in terms of bruising on the wrists, even though she claimed that. You know, so it sounds just kind of fishy that none of this stuff proved to be true in the examining room.
Well, I can see how these answers could be slightly different just because of the line of questioning. It's not like they asked her to say what happened. They were questioning her. And so that line of questioning can lead you down different roads, you know. So
wait, who is the examiner?
Or so they both questioned her. So the police questioned her and she said that she was restrained by the wrists. And he said anywhere else. And he said, yes, the chest. Now, if the nurse examiner doesn't say anywhere else, then she's not necessarily going to say that. But if, say, they just asked her to tell her story the way it happened, I feel like that would be a good representation, because when you're going back and telling a story, most times, I feel like, I mean, this guy said there's discrepancies because they're not comfortable, foggy, traumatic conditions, but I really feel like if you truly relive a situation, like I have a traumatic situation in my life, and when I go through that, when I tell that story, I tell it the exact same way every single time, mm-hmm. because that's how it happened.
And but did no you right away the next day, if someone had asked you, is it the same as how you would describe it?
In my situation, it was. It's never changed. It's never wavered. It was very clear to me.
I wonder how long she was restrained, like what the amount of time was. Mm. Because if you think about it, let's say, for example, she was on her back and he's restraining her by the wrists. Mm-hmm. On the way to get to her wrists, mm-hmm. he would have to put mm-hmm. his arm across her chest mm-hmm. to get to her wrists.
Well, how do you know
so
that?
So what if the wrists were the primary area that he was restraining,
right.
and the chest was being restrained only on the
or
way
even
to
if
the wrist being
he's holding her wrists so, here, a byproduct of
why
that
would
be
to put his
he's
arm
on top
on her
of her.
So maybe it's
pinning him down.
If it was a shorter amount of time frame, maybe it wouldn't have seemed as significant to her to bring that up to the nurse examiner, who was coming at it from a different angle than the police investigator.
I think there are so many reasons why there could be those discrepancies. I mean, the victim's advocate outlined a lot of them. We've talked about, you know, the line of questioning, whether or not there was some mental fog there, the fact that it would have been a traumatic event for her, and sometimes details come and go. I mean, I don't think that's, at least not for me and not for the research I've read, I don't think it's true that you have a perfect recollection of events. I saw a documentary that showed people's reactions to 9/11. Like the day after, you know, week after, you know, year after, they followed up, and their recollection changed massively to the point where it's like they were talking to different people. They're in different
places. Yeah, they might believe that they're saying it verbatim.
Of course they do. They believe it's
well, I don't think mine was perfect, but it definitely didn't change.
Well, but You're it's like, not so a contradiction.
Also, just think about if you're this victim.
Okay. But it's like, if...
Is this a major change? I mean, she said it's she's actually, being
to
restrained.
To me, actually, it's not a major change. Because okay. It's wrists. I mean, it's minor to me. It's yeah. not... Right. It's wrist change. Because what you to said about, you know, kind of making your way to the wrist. Because you can't yeah. have your chest, your arm on someone and restrain the wrist. You can't. Yeah. It's one right. or the other.
I wouldn't...
Yeah. So that makes sense.
Unless
the kind
you
of,
have the wrists here and you're holding yeah. them down. Yeah. There's yeah. so many no, ways you with could, your body weight and...
Absolutely.
Right,
and she was planning on not sharing this information with anyone. Yeah. And then her friend talks to her, mm-hmm. her roommate talks to mm-hmm. her. When she walks into the police station, which is the first time she's talking about it, she's going to be in a very strange headspace mm-hmm. to be bringing this up for the first time. Mm-hmm. A couple hours go by. Now, the nurse examiner happens afterwards, but there's hours. There's probably a waiting period. Mm-hmm. Her yeah. brain is probably, you know, her mind is probably so reeling right now.
If her memory is so messed up, then how can we trust anything she says?
Yeah. You wouldn't Wait, forget what, something like
what,
that.
What kind of an argument is that for someone who's just potentially undergone so that if they can't remember the thing that happened to them?
So anyone who's them? Traumatized should not be able to report why they are traumatized.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying it creates reasonable doubt if she's not able to recall what happened. Honestly,
is this a massive discrepancy?
Yes, I mean, because like. I've had consensual sex where someone holds my arms down, or I think we all have been, maybe, I don't know, but like that arm against the chest to yeah. me is forceful.
Yeah, except that we're whereas talking about the wrists, potentially non-consensual sex,
sure,
which would put you in a very different headspace.
But this also, holding someone's wrist as opposed to forcefully putting your arm on a chest is very different to me.
Well, think about, too, she's going into the police station for the first time. She's had to psych herself up
yeah.
to this moment. She knows this is the testimony that's really going to count. This is my yeah. account of the situation, and I'm going to remember every detail. Mm-hmm. Like you said, hours go by. Yeah. She's now just with the nurse examiner. Mm-hmm. She thinks she's in a more intimate setting, but mm-hmm. a really jarring one. They make her strip down. Yeah. She's naked.
Yeah, but
does she really want to... call out every single
yeah.
area.
But
she's exposed. She's already feeling exposed, and she thinks that maybe this account is lesser than.
But of all the accounts, if you're talking to the examiner who's going to gather the medical evidence of what is a kind of medical physical crime, you'd think that would be the most important place to recall everything and really focus.
But she's concerned with the one area that's hurting her. Mm. Which there is a tear, which yeah. they found.
So
she knows her body.
So even the chest and wrist not hurting her. So then why would she even bring those up in the first place?
4 days after the event.
They were.
Yeah.
If there's no bruising, then they probably weren't. So then it probably wasn't a rape.
I could be held down and still not hurt even a moment later.
And if
I'm a small
threatened
person.
Threatened or scared too. You could freeze. You know, there's all sorts of things that. Could where people could still be doing things against their will and not being resisting in a physical mm-hmm. way. It's possible.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that if you're going to accuse somebody of rape, you better have your shit together and you better have the story the same every single time. Write it down
and
in a journal.
And it better be beyond a reasonable doubt.
Well, I doubt that someone gave her that pep talk before she went in there and said, honey, your accounts better be identical.
Studying pre-law, where she has
or unless this was as calculated
family.
As you yeah, apparently
well,
think
exactly.
it may have been.
Or law enforcement.
And if it was, then
family.
She would probably have her shit together.
Yeah, I almost
and also
feel
try
like
to recount a story after a few shots of alcohol. You know, it's like that's going to be difficult. You know, if you're sober, it's one thing. If you're alcohol.
I think it'd be more suspect if she was giving an identical version, detailed for detail, in every setting, with different people. I feel like when you're, even if you're telling a joke or a story between friends, you're in a different situation, a different day, different time, whatever, it's going to change it. You might forget a little detail or another detail will emerge. That's natural.
Joke or rape case, same thing, right?
Yeah, but also I think when
my
things
point
are...
is about human memory. And the fact that it's imperfect, and that usually when people are telling the truth, that's when there will be little discrepancies and things. All kinds of new details emerge. I feel like if someone's telling something identical every time, that makes it seem much more memorable.
I disagree. Oh, I disagree.
You're nervous when you have anxiety. There's no telling what's coming out of your mouth half of the time.
No, because the truth, when you're telling the truth is the truth. And so it's just simply...
Yes. Well, a lot of people are debating that right now.
Okay, but if I'm telling you what my day was like, and I'm saying, okay, I got up, and I got some coffee, and then I went to the bathroom, and then I got dressed.
Oh, but wait, but then I also went to get my shoes in between that. I mean, that's also the truth, well, but you didn't mention the first
that's
time.
That's also more mundane. I would say that's more mundane. Like, if I get in a car accident, or anyone I've ever known to get in a car accident... You say, hey, so what happened in the accident? They don't go, I don't know. I'm not really sure. They go, dude, this guy came out of the right. Yes. I was taking a left. He just came right across the middle. The light was green. There was someone crossing the street. I tried to avoid him, and boom, we hit.
That's what I mean.
The corner of my car.
And when you tell the story of how your car got hit, you're going to tell the story the exact same way every time because that's how it happened.
Yeah. And you're not thinking and plotting about hiding it so no one knows, which is what she did for 4 days.
You're going back to your memories.
She planned on not talking about it.
Yeah.
And now she's being forced to talk about it for the first time after deciding probably that she wasn't going to talk to anyone about it. And now she's being forced to give all the details that she might have tried to forget about in a few days. And of course her mind is going to be a little scattered. Mm-hmm. And she's telling this person one thing, she's telling this person not something different. She just left one piece out, like the shoes.
Right.
And see, and that is interesting to me too, like when you bring in the part of her trying to forget stuff. You know, mm-hmm. so that gives a different aspect where it's like, okay, that's a little foggy, a little cloudier. It's like, it's not just like, okay, this is my story. This is, you know, we've got him now. This is a clear-cut case. Yeah. It was this, this, and this. It's not that. It's like confusing.
That would be a calculated accusation, which, you know, which is a consideration of ours. Did she plan on accusing him to get him in trouble? She would have had a straighter story if walking into that police department had she wanted to do that.
Probably going to need a videotape.
Well, it would be nice if we had one. Mm-hmm. Well, it would be horrific, but it would be helpful.
Jesus.
It would
be helpful in this situation.
And the truth is, even with a videotape, people watching that videotape might all see it differently.
When is suspicion healthy? Ever? Always? At what point does suspicion become doubt? At a time when we're culturally discussing the role of affirmative consent, what constitutes violation, and who should be considered dangerous, the question needs to be asked. At what point is a sexual opportunist a sexual predator? Next time on Deliberations.
What is pickup artistry?
Am I on trial?
It might be viewed as rape culture.
Deliberations is created, written, produced, directed, and edited by me, Chelsea Cox, and it proudly airs as part of the Audio Boom Network. Today's cast, jury, Lindsay Purcell, Lindsay Fishkin, Lindsay Mallard, Ross Denyer, Kevin Bryan, and Drew Phillips. Courtroom, Alyssa Ariel Perez, Laura Meadows, Blake McCormick, and Molly Wheaton. Editorial advisement by Jessa Nicholson-Getz from the hit podcast Getting Off. Find me on Twitter at DeliberationPod and join the discussion inside our Facebook group, Deliberations Room. We have a very special jury break dropping this Monday, so don't miss it. We'll see you then.